Winter's a quiet time of year on the farm. You might fix equipment, set aside time to plan the next year, or take a cue from Mark Arnish.
What do you do in the wintertime here? Well, part of it is you unwind.
And Arnish has earned it. During the busy season, he's tending to about 3,000 acres of grain, wheat, barley, corn, on his farm in Keensburg, about 40 minutes northeast of Denver.
There's times on this farm, we've harvested a crop for 84 consecutive days. Well, after a while, that kind of grates on you. And so we use January and February to unwind, to plan.
It's also the time of year he gets to spend more downtime with his family.
It's my little granddaughter in there.
Charlotte, his granddaughter, is visiting the farm with her mom, and they're hanging out in the kitchen. Arnish comes from a long line of farmers, and he's already got the future mapped out for little Charlotte. She'd be the fifth generation of the family to farm this land.
Well, she's two, but I think she's going to come by it genetically. You can just feel that she's very much in tune with the land, with our lifestyle, and with the way we make our life.
Over the generations, the family has changed how they work this land, from adopting new equipment to changing how they protect their crops from pests.
The pesticides of his father's and grandfather's generations were more dangerous and less efficient. They had to be sprayed broadly over entire fields.
When I was a kid, I can remember my dad talking about using a lot of pesticides in gallons per acre. Today, we talk about using insecticides in fractional amounts of ounces per acre.
Now on the farm, they apply pesticides in a totally different way, by coating seeds before they go into the ground. Most farmers buy their seeds already treated, but Arnish grows grain for seed. He's a seed seller, so he does it himself.
Well, come on in.
The equipment he uses to coat his seeds is unhooked for the season, but he explains how the process works.
This system is very precise. We use a computer to basically measure the rate of grain coming in, and then we match it with a computer system that it dispenses the chemistry specifically based upon that weight coming through.
The machine looks a bit like a Dr. Seuss contraption. A red bucket sits on top of a metal canister that tapers to a cone. It's a spinning atomizer, and that's where the seeds meet the pesticides, a type of chemical called neonicotinoids, or neonics.
As the seed flows through, that atomizer turns that into basically like a vapor or a mist, and it coats the seed as it falls into this drum.
For a lot of farmers in Colorado and across the country, neonic-coated seeds are a game-changer. Arnish describes them as the greatest breakthrough of his farming career.
But this breakthrough for one type of farmer is a nightmare for others. Neonics are being blamed for huge die-offs among domestic bees and butterflies, and some scientists are warning they could be a threat to human health as well.
There's a growing movement to restrict or ban neonics that some in Colorado see as the best way to protect public health and the environment. But farmers like Arnish warn it could make life much harder on their land. This is Purplish from CPR News and the Colorado Capital News Alliance, a show about Colorado politics and policy. I'm Benta Berkland. Another Purplish debut for this episode. We have Ray Solomon joining me. She's covering the legislative session with me for CPR, and she also has a lengthy background covering agricultural issues. Thanks so much for being here.
Hey, Benta.
In this episode, we're going to spend time talking about the restrictions some Colorado lawmakers want to put on neonics. Before we get into that, though, I think it will be good to better understand why these chemicals are controversial.
So neonics were rolled out initially as safer than many other pesticides because they're less lethal to mammals. But less lethal is not the same as safe. And a growing body of research about their unintended consequences is sparking concern among scientists, environmental groups, the medical community, and lawmakers.
Colorado isn't the first state to try to address this. New York and Vermont have both passed laws that go into effect in 3 years to restrict when and how farmers can use neonic-treated seeds. And other states are also weighing similar legislation.
And Colorado already does have some restrictions in place on neonics. Only licensed dealers can sell them. That means the average person can't just go to the garden store and buy them. But that was never the biggest problem with neonics anyway.
Right. I mean, for people concerned about the environment-wide damage they believe these pesticides are causing, they want to tackle it where it's being used widely. And that's the agriculture industry.
That brings us to this legislation, a group of Democratic lawmakers who wanted to make it harder for farmers to use neonicotinoids.
And the ag industry is a significant industry in Colorado, close to $50 billion in economic activity. That's according to a state analysis. The top commodities for Colorado, we've got cattle, dairy, followed by grains like corn, hay, wheat. So any major change to that industry, you can imagine, comes with a lot of people paying attention, a lot of eyes on that, and potential opposition. That's what happened with this bill. It didn't even make it past its first committee hearing.
But it did bring up an important conversation about agriculture, the environment, and our food supply.
Neonics have become nearly ubiquitous in agriculture. But let's drill down on why lawmakers in this state and other parts of the U.S. are starting to really zero in on neonics, and why now?
Yes, neonics came on the market over the last couple of decades. It's often used as a coating directly on the seeds, and as the plant grows, it takes up the chemical from the seed, so it's in the entire plant from root to pollen, and when a pest takes a nibble on any part of that plant, it gets poisoned. Farmers like to use it to target insects like wireworm, which can destroy corn seedlings by nibbling on the roots before they even pop up as seedlings.
Ray, you've seen these coated seeds. Do they look much different than non-coated seeds?
Well, you can see that there's a coating, so they're a little bit smoother than a normal seed, and there's like a color. I saw some purple alfalfa-coated seeds, and I've also seen pictures of like aquamarine seeds and all these different crazy colors you'd never seen in nature.
We heard Arnish talking about how much of a breakthrough he views this, just working in the ag industry, coating the seeds with the pesticides versus spraying fields. He feels like it's a lot more efficient and more targeted. What are you hearing in terms of the biggest concerns about this?
Well, neonics are very water-soluble. That's part of what makes them so effective, how the plants can take them up into every part of the greenery. But there's a downside to that. Here's Sean Conley, a professor of agronomy at the University of Wisconsin-Madison.
That water solubility is what also is one of the bad things, because it makes it readily available to move through the water profile, i.e. through either leaching to groundwater, to moving into stream banks and whatnot. So I think, like everything, there's pros and cons to it.
So basically the fear is you put these treated seeds in the ground, but when it rains or when farmers water their crops, some of that coating washes off and starts moving through the ecosystem. And that's bad because when it comes to the potency of neonics,
they're extremely effective at killing insects, which is why a farmer might like to use them, but they're non-specific.
That's Allison Johnson, an attorney with the Natural Resources Defense Council.
So all of our pollinators, our butterflies, our bees, beetles and other beneficial predators are all impacted by these very toxic insecticides.
Ray, you've been looking at some of the research on pollinators like bees, butterflies, and some other bird species that are in decline in Colorado. And how does that relate to neonics?
There is a lot of research showing that neonics are harmful to these pollinators. There was a recent state commissioned report that described the status of Colorado's native pollinating insects as tenuous, and it specifically pointed to neonics as one of the main reasons, among others. You know, the study also cites climate change, drought, habitat loss, but neonics is on that list. And there's also some science linking neonics to birth defects in large mammals like deer. And when they run off the farm and get into aquatic ecosystems, the chemicals have been shown to kill fish.
What about impacts on people?
There's a lot of concern that when they get into people and they eventually do make their way up the food chain, they could cause neurological and reproductive problems.
Ray, how settled would you say the science is on some of these harms? Is it fairly disputed or more of a consensus, knowing that there's other factors as well, like drought and climate change?
That is a really tough question, because there are always people who will question how settled science ever is. But I think the most established research links neonics to negative impacts on pollinators. Certainly not everyone agrees with the scope of that link or causation, but it's not really disputed by most scientists at this point.
And other countries are also regulating this.
That is right. In the EU, they've banned outdoor use of several types of neonics, and there are also some pretty tight regulations in the Canadian province of Quebec.
Okay, now that we know a little bit more about neonics and the science that's worrying some Colorado lawmakers, next we'll take a look at what they tried to do about it. This is Purplish from CPR News and the Colorado Capital News Alliance. I think I hear some bees there. Is that some bees in the background?
Yes, Benta. We've been talking about bees this whole episode. I thought it was time we hear straight from the source.
There's the queen right there.
Randall Heidi is a commercial beekeeper with dozens of hives around the Denver metro area, including Greenwood Village, where I tagged along on his rounds.
You can barely see him, but there's some little tiny one-day-old eggs.
You could see little bee larvae, too. Tiny white grubs. Bee babies. Each one curled up inside a honeycomb cell. But Heidi says those eggs, those larvae, and all his hives face an ongoing threat because of those neonic-treated seeds.
Because, as we've mentioned, studies show these chemicals are highly toxic to bees and other pollinators.
If bees get into pesticides, basically they bring it back to the colony, it gets into the wax, you know, absorbs into the wood, and so it really, you know, it can destroy the whole colony.
This is Heidi's full-time gig, tending bees, selling honey, so his livelihood completely depends on his bees' well-being. And that's why he's so concerned about the neonic-treated seeds. The chemical is in the pollen of any plants that grow from them.
And then the pollen is their protein source. That's what they're eating. They're feeding to the babies.
So when you were out visiting with him, did he say if his hives had been dying because of neonics?
So far, Heidi has been very lucky. None of his hives are near neonic-treated fields, and none of his bees have gotten into it that he knows of. But the beekeeping community is pretty tight-knit. They swap stories, so he knows what can happen.
If the bees get into pesticides, like you'll come back, you know, your colony will be just fine 1 week, and then you'll come back the next time to check on them, and you'll have, you know, 50,000 dead bees sitting on the front porch. And so it's a pretty obvious sign that, you know, they got into pesticides.
And Heidi says it's not just about the money a beekeeper loses when a colony collapses. He nurtures the same hives for years and, you know, develops a whole relationship with his bees. So losing hives would be emotionally devastating, too.
I understand that farmers don't, you know, want their crops devastated. But the problem I see is it's, you know, these chemicals are taking out all the bugs.
That's why beekeepers like Heidi were some of the biggest supporters of the neonic legislation that was introduced at the State House earlier this session, Senate Bill 65. But this bill wasn't a straight-up ban.
No, it was a restriction. It was structured so a third-party expert would have to sign off before farmers could buy neonic-treated seeds, sort of like getting a prescription from a doctor.
And it's a similar approach to what New York and Vermont took. They passed those laws, but they haven't gone into effect yet. So that means in the U.S., we don't have data on how effective this prescription model approach is for neonics.
That's true, but we do have some data from Canada. I mentioned Quebec had passed restrictions before. They also adopted this prove your need model in 2019. And after that was enacted, neonicotinoid use really dropped off the map there with no significant economic impact for the farmers.
Really, that's surprising.
It is. I think it has to do with the impact of neonicotinoids and their cost. So there are studies that show there's little to no economic benefit to farmers who use neonics because any modest value they gain from whatever yield boost they get from using neonicotinoids is offset by the cost of the chemicals. So it's sort of a break even at best.
So then I'm wondering, with the farmer you talked to, Arnish, he treats seeds himself with neonics. Why would he do that if there's not really an economic benefit then?
Well, he's pretty skeptical of those studies. Other farmers also pointed out that that research was done in other places like Quebec, but farming is really, really local. So what's true for those climates might not be true in Colorado. And he says it's not true on his farm.
A lot of farmers say these neonics are really important, efficient, they need to be using them. Is that why they've become so widespread?
There's really two perspectives on that. The backers of the bill say that seed companies are using these neonic treatments on the seeds by default, and that's the only thing they're offering, and farmers don't have a choice. They have to buy what's available, and untreated seeds aren't available. But farmers I've spoken to, including Mark Arnish, tell me that's just not true, that they don't have an issue buying untreated seeds if they don't need the treatments.
We use neonics within our operation when they're warranted, and that's certainly not every year. We make adjustments year over year based upon insect pressures, based upon economic thresholds.
But experts estimate that the neonic-treated seeds are used on anywhere between 80% and 98% of crops like corn. So either way, it's being used on a lot of acreage. For Sean Conley, the expert with the University of Wisconsin-Madison we heard from earlier, that's the rub.
I don't like to see something just ubiquitously thrown into the environment and treated as an insurance policy.
He says that's simply not the proper use of a pesticide.
And how do farmers take that critique?
Yeah, they take it pretty personally. The farmers that I've spoken to find it pretty insulting that the bill backers claim they're being thoughtless about what they put on their land. Farmers are really careful stewards of their land in general. For instance, Mark Arnish, he's invested money in being able to treat his own seeds. He's not just buying them by default. And those chemicals are expensive for farmers. Arnish told me if he could save the money and not use them, he would opt to do that every time.
And major players in the state's agriculture industry also complained about the bill, and they felt that lawmakers who wrote it didn't try to get their expertise, didn't reach out. Here's Brandon Melnikoff with the Colorado Farm Bureau.
We were not invited to the table when this bill was in the drafting stages. We didn't see any language until it was introduced. And, you know, there's that saying that if you're not at the table, you're on the menu. So we feel like this is an attack on our most effective and efficient and affordable practices. And we're quite frustrated with the policy.
Senate Bill 65 faced an uphill battle right from the start. Even though it's a Democratic bill, Colorado has a Democratic-controlled legislature, but that's not a guarantee for passage. When the bill was assigned to the Senate Ag Committee, that committee assignment makes sense. This committee, though, is very ag-friendly. And given the committee makeup, it only takes one Democrat to side with Republicans to defeat this bill. In the end, two Democrats voted against it.
And we knew going into the hearing that the Republicans on the committee were going to be no votes. The bill's sponsor, Senator Katie Wallace, knew that too. But at the hearing, she made her final pitch and said the issue was personal for her, too. She talked about growing up with climate change and extreme weather.
That's all that my generation and each coming after me will ever know. And what created this situation? Decade after decade after decade of the hubris of human beings thinking we can act recklessly with the planet, including placing hazardous chemicals into our environment.
And I think it's worth noting, the Democratic no votes, they didn't disregard the pressing issue of climate change or even really bring that up. And what stood out to me as well is that the Democrats who voted against it, they didn't even seem that opposed to regulating neonics. I've covered a lot of things over the years where lawmakers vote no because they're vehemently opposed to a policy. In this case, the Democrats essentially said the bill was kind of too much too soon. Here's Dylan Roberts. He chairs the Senate Ag Committee, and he represents a large swath of the Western Slope.
We do hundreds of bills here every year. Some are pretty small, admittedly, so they make little tweaks. This is not one of those bills. This is a big step. And I don't feel like the conversations and the engagement of both sides has happened yet enough so to make that big of a step.
Robert specifically called out the polls administration, which is not something you always hear from a Democrat. The governor supported this neo-NICS bill. He even gave it a brief shout out during his State of the State address. That was back in January. But Robert said Governor Polis and the Colorado Department of Agriculture needed to do more to make their case, to lay the groundwork for a policy change like this.
He's had 8 years for his administration to be out there trying to move this ball forward with voluntary measures or with more measured steps rather than this giant step.
To give you a little sense of the scale of this bill, nonpartisan legislative analysts calculated it would apply to about 24,000 farms in Colorado. And the analysts estimated that two-thirds of those producers would try to get permission to keep using neonics.
And then there's the details of what a farmer would have to do to prove they need to use the neonics, how to get that prescription. That was maybe the biggest unanswered question about this policy, how the program would work on a practical level. That's something that Republican Senator Rod Pelton, who's from Cheyenne Wells on the Eastern Plains, spoke about in the hearing. He probably has the most direct experience with neonics on the committee. He said he's planted thousands and thousands of acres of treated seeds, corn, sunflower, milo seeds.
I think while your bill doesn't set out to take tools out of toolbox, it makes them have to go ask permission from the almighty government to do what they think is right on their farm. And I don't think that's right. The farmers I know and work with are responsible stewards of our land. And so with that, I can't support your policy today.
Ray, let's say there had been more outreach to farmers like Roberts and some other people wanted. The Polis administration makes this case for the bill. Any sense, based on your reporting, that it could have resulted in a different outcome?
The fact that there really wasn't much collaboration with commercial farmers, that was a really big sticking point for people like Mark Arnish. He told me that he felt really blindsided by this legislation, and he would have liked to have a real conversation with the backers.
But a lot of times when things come to agriculture, we can work within the language of a bill and make it better for the farmer, make it better for agriculture, and certainly make it better for the state.
At the same time, backers of the legislation want farmers to shift their thinking, to sort of zoom out to the bigger picture beyond their own fields.
As a Coloradan, we're a fence-out state, but I can't fence out these chemicals. And as a woman, we've heard from a lot of men, I worry about my kids. I don't want to see the birth defects, and I don't want this.
That's rancher Zara Chapanya testifying at the committee hearing.
I'm passionate about it, and because I care about my community, and I also care about the farmers who are reliant on this, and I hope we can have a different option for them to feel safe making a transition to something different.
Ayana Malik also spoke at that hearing. She's a registered nurse from Larimer County.
So I ask you to imagine standing in my place, notifying the family that there is the possibility that preventable exposure to neurotoxic chemicals may have been contributing to their child's challenges. If we have the opportunity to reduce that risk through preventable, unnecessary exposure to neonics, shouldn't we take it?
I think it's safe to say there's just a lot of education in both directions, by the way, that could make a difference here.
Yeah. I mean, certainly discussions and communication is the first step. Doesn't mean they're going to reach an outcome everyone agrees with. One thing that kind of stood out to me was Democratic Senator Nick Henriksen. He's from Pueblo. He voted against the bill, but he did warn farmers that they should not just be outright opposed to any and all regulation. I feel like he told them, look, you need to come to the table. You know, I'm with you today on this bill, but that doesn't mean I'm going to be opposed to it necessarily in future sessions, especially if farmers are just, nope, don't come near us. We don't want more regulation. that senator did not think that was going to be an approach that he'd appreciate moving forward. Knowing how passionate she is about this, did Senator Wallace say what she plans to do in a future session? Does she want to bring the bill back?
I did get to sit down with her for a postmortem after the vote. This issue is not going away because it is so pressing. So I look forward to continue to work on it. I think this bill will likely be back next year.
She's going to work on future iterations of the bill and build support, build a coalition around it, try to engage a little bit more with the community.
Colorado lawmakers seem poised to bring up neonics restrictions in an upcoming legislative session. And certainly the underlying issues leading farmers to use these pesticides, that's not going away either.
No, definitely not. Whatever the lawmakers decide to do, the bugs are there, the bugs are in the ground. And something that Mark Arnish told me when I went out to visit him has been sticking with me. He told me that when he's making decisions about when to use neonicotinoids, one of the major factors is like how hot and dry it's been. The drier the year, the more likely he is to need to use neonicotinoids. And I'm looking outside and I'm thinking, well, gosh, we haven't really had a winter this year. It's been warm. It's been dry. When I was visiting the beehives, the bees were buzzing about in February. It'll be something we continue to grapple with as our climate continues to get warmer and drier.
That's it for this episode. Purplish is a production of member-supported Colorado Public Radio and the Colorado Capital News Alliance.
The CCNA is a collaboration between KUNC News, Colorado Public Radio, Rocky Mountain PBS, and the Colorado Sun, with support from news outlets throughout the state. Funding for the Alliance is provided in part by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. I'm Ray Solomon.
And I'm Benta Berkland. Our producer is Stephanie Wolf. Sound design and engineering by Shane Rumsey. Our theme music is by Brad Turner. And Megan Furley is our executive producer.
Purplish will be back in your feeds next week. That's right. Purplish will be weekly again through the end of session. Subscribe now so you don't miss an episode.
This is Purplish from CPR News and the Colorado Capital News Alliance.